sure you're right, and you know that you're right on target here at Dick's Target Club. My name is Mark Antony, and these are the Nihilists. Yeah. On my left, a man the band like we call a saxophone player. Only been playing saxophone for 3 weeks. Isn't that amazing? And on my right, on a work release program from San Bruno County Jail, on Leopard Skin Johnson, the one, the only, Shocking Cut. These fearful times make willing slaves who seek their freedom in their chains. Reagan's election was no surprise. You voted for Nixon twice. Why?
Hello, this is Paul Kangas. This is radio station KPOO, 89.5 FM, San Francisco, and this is the program Reality Sandwich, the continuing investigation into the assassination of President John Kennedy, Dr. Martin Luther King, Robert Kennedy. As I announced last week, this program would be dedicated exclusively to the new blockbuster information on the King assassination that has come out of Memphis, Tennessee, in which a reporter down there stumbled across some military files indicating that it was U.S. Army intelligence, specifically 8 Green Beret snipers, that tracked down and killed Dr. Martin Luther King because the Army had labeled King a Viet Cong sympathizer and no different than the Viet Cong in 1968 that the Army was fighting in Vietnam. The Army decided they were fighting on two fronts. In Vietnam, they were assassinating the leadership of the Vietnamese movement, and in the United States, they were deciding to assassinate the leadership of the civil rights and the peace movement in the United States. What I'm going to tell you has not been published in the United States other than one source. And fortunately, I have spies and eyes and hands in every state in the nation combing through the newspapers looking for such information. And one of my spies in Tennessee forwarded this information to me, fortunately. So if you know people in other states, or if you read the media and you clip a story, please send it to us. If you spot a story, clip it and send it to us. Our address is P.O. Box 422644, San Francisco 94142. What the information I'm about to read over the airwaves in San Francisco is so explosive that I highly recommend that you turn on your tape recorders now, because there is no other source other than this program about this information. Now, you think the ADL scandal and shame was big about how this B'nai B'rith ADL organization has been spying on civil rights groups and peace groups and women's groups all throughout the United States for dozens of years. I found reference to it back in the 50s as a right-wing spy organization, spying on people in the 50s, the ADL and B'nai B'rith. So if you think that scandal and that shame is explosive, wait till you see what we now have on the Army. We can now prove upside down and backwards, specifically 8 Army Green Beret snipers killed Dr. Martin Luther King. They are the ones that were tracking Dr. Martin Luther King like he was a Viet Cong. They are the ones that decided to kill him. Not they decided. They were the ones following orders from the FBI supervisors and the CIA supervisors. Military intelligence is not some group of untouchables, anonymous group of people that just go around killing whoever they feel like. There was a coordinated attack by the FBI and the CIA inside this country and military intelligence inside this country to attempt to suppress the civil rights movement for the last 75 years, according to these files. And if you'd like a copy of these files, please send a self-addressed stamped envelope and a donation to P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco. We're making this information available to you at cost because we want the information out, because we want to inform the American public about what has been going on in this country. We want to keep President Clinton alive because we know that the Army intelligence, the FBI, and the CIA will kill Clinton if Clinton gets out of line. And Clinton is already out of line by raising taxes on the rich, by legalizing the French abortion pill RU486, and passing the motor voter bill. The right wing is scared in this country, deathly scared. They're out on a revenge against Clinton. And let me read to you a section from this report now that will show you how crazy and how paranoid the military leaders in this country really are. Now, this article is quite extensive, quite long, and you're going to find it very embarrassing because it names names of well-known black leaders in the United States who we now know from military intelligence files were actually spies for the FBI. And this material has not been published anywhere in the United States other than this one source. Okay, here's a general overview from this article of how this was done. And then I'll get into the naming of the names. It's this section of the huge article is entitled, How They Spied, U.S. Army Domestic Spying Operations in 1968. 304 intelligence offices across the continental United States, divided into 6 regions, military intelligence groups, plus the 116th Military Intelligence Group that operated exclusively in metropolitan Washington, D.C. That was fact one. Important to understand the way this was set up, because by understanding the way it was set up, we now know where the files are on the killing of King and Robert Kennedy and John Kennedy and a lot of other people that nobody has ever looked into before. These are military files that nobody has looked into. This one newspaper did it because they found a reference to them. They were targeted. And so they started digging into this area, and they found out that there was huge files nobody was looking into. Okay, fact two. Fiscal 1968 budget for all the military intelligence grouping work was $14 million, up 26% from the previous year, plus $300,000 for surveillance equipment, which was cheap, cheap, cheap back in those days. Fact three. All offices were connected by a state-of-the-art communication system described as an automatic sending and receiving teletype with voice data capacity. Another super secret military intelligence grouping, the 902nd, controlled directly by Major General William Yarborough, was the Assistant Chief of Staff for Intelligence. The fourth fact here, 902nd was commanded by a Vietnam veteran Colonel John Downey, D-O-W-N-I-E, from the offices in Falls Church, Virginia. Next fact. Classified intelligence files reviewed by the newspaper revealed that the 902nd spied on politicians, activists, and celebrities. Next. 8 military intelligence groups employed 798 Army officers, 1,500 enlisted men, 1,500 civilians, including 67 black undercover agents. Of the total, 1,500 were directly involved in intelligence gathering activities. About 260 of these spies were civilians. Next fact, Army intelligence maintained subversive national security dossiers on 80,000 Americans and 200,000 organizations. What? 80,000 people and 200,000 organizations. Wonder how they count that. Next, it had access to the Defense Central Index of Investigators, 19 million personal dossiers, more than 2.5 million files at the FBI, Secret Service, Civil Service Commission, Passport Office, and CIA, criminal files at most large police departments, credit bureaus, school registration and airline reservation records, and special services staff files, a covert group of Internal Revenue Service agents that maintained tax dossiers on 8,500 individuals and 2,800 organizations that they were spying on to try and wipe out of existence. That would be an interesting list to look at, because I suspect if you looked at that list of 8,500 individuals, you'd find most of them met untimely deaths at a young age in a tragic manner that was not investigated by the police. That's what the IRS does to people that it wants to get rid of. It simply kills people. And it happens throughout this country, but it's done secretly, and you're not supposed to know about it. Shh! You didn't hear about it. Nobody is listening. So, turn off your tape recorder, please. Don't listen to this stuff. At Fort Holbert, Maryland, headquarters of the Army's Intelligence Command, the giant U.S. Army Investigative Records Repository contains 6 million personal and 200,000 subject files in orange folders. That's interesting. They must be Buddhist. Beginning in early 1967, a $2 million computerized filing and retrieval system, the Rantriever 1, was installed. It was necessary because the previous year, the repository processed 300,000 new cases and handled another 600,000 requests for dossiers by various federal agencies. So military intelligence was handling all these various intelligence agencies' requests and cases. Interesting. And all this stuff nobody's been looking at over the years because nobody knew it existed. Nobody knew that there were 8 U.S. Green Beret snipers following Dr. Martin Luther King around the country. Had you ever heard that fact before? I hadn't either till I read this article out of the Tennessee newspaper. So now we know, 25 years later, that it wasn't James Earl Ray who killed Dr. Martin Luther King, that it was Army intelligence snipers. And over and over in this article, you'll see names and proof that it was the Army who killed Dr. Martin Luther King because they thought Dr. Martin Luther King was a Viet Cong. What was that famous line Muhammad Ali used to say? I'm not going to Vietnam to fight no war. No Viet Cong ever called me nigger. And that's exactly the problem. The white racists in this country, especially, you know, military officers in the United States live in a totally white world. There is only 3% of the officers in the U.S. Army are white, are black, 3%. And they live in these military enclaves where they never see black people except as servants, house cleaners, or enlisted personnel who follow their orders. They never have to deal with black storekeepers or black anything because they live in a totally white world. That's the Army, a totally white world for the officers. Army officers live in a totally white world, and it keeps their brain totally white. That's why we have to now make sure that West Point becomes 50% black in the 1990s. So please get out a pencil, pen, send a postcard to President Clinton insisting that West Point has to be 50% black military officers in 1994, that we won't vote for him in 1994 unless he appoints. That's how you get into these military academies, like West Point or Annapolis. you get a political appointment there. So if you're black or Asian or Latin or American Indian and you want to go to a free military college, you have to contact somebody in political power and get an appointment there. And so we can make West Point 50% black by next year. Okay, next fact in this story here. In military intelligence units also assigned to the U.S. Strike Command at MacDill Air Force Base in Florida and the Continental Army Command under the direction of Intelligence Brigadier General Ash. Okay, that's enough of these facts. And they got these facts all highlighted in a certain way here. But I suppose now what we need to do is listen to some music or else go into this more readable material. I tell you, after reading this material, there's one thing that reinforces in my mind. Many people think the people who wear hoods over their head are racists, or that the people who walk around and with swastikas, the Nazis, are racist. And it's been my opinion for years that the real racists in this country don't wear hoods, they wear military uniforms. Let me tell you, this article, this material, reinforces my mind that there's no doubt about it, that the real Nazis in this country are the U.S. Army. Okay, let me show you what I mean. Listen to this. This is, this section of the research is an article about a Colonel Ralph Van Demann, who created the Army's Black Spy Network in 1917. He continued to influence spying on American citizens until his death in 1952. The spy system that would question the loyalty of black Americans for generations began May 3, 1917. That was the day Secretary of War Newton Baker ordered Van Damme to crank up the Army's sleepy military intelligence division. After declaring war on Germany, the United States needed an internal security network, and the Army would provide it. The Secret Service and the Justice Department's infant, tiny Bureau of Investigations were too small and too inexperienced to handle the large counter-espionage task that they had in mind. Van Damme immediately set out to define which groups posed a serious threat to the United States' security. In June 1917, a memo to Baker, he said that the United States' four principal domestic enemies were the IWW, the International Workers of the World, a forerunner of the AFL-CIO, which bitterly opposed the war, opponents of the draft, socialists, and the Negro unrest. Racial unrest and violence disgusted Van Damme, according to letters he wrote to his family while stationed in the Philippines in 1906. Ooh, I'm going to skip some of this because it's ancient history and get more into the current meat here. In August, Van Damme, then aged 52, walked into a small conference room in Washington and shared remarks about various racial violence in the country. In a memo to Baker 9 days later, Van Damme declared that German influence was at the bottom of Negro unrest. He also predicted, this is more ancient history stuff. Let me get into some current people here. Military intelligence records show that a constant concern over the loyalty of black churchgoers and the leaders, despite large public demonstrations of patriotism, like the National Baptist Convention meeting that Army spies photographed in October 1918. Van Damme's agents watched families that entertained troops and followed soldiers' girlfriends to determine their loyalty, watched hotels and listened to Sunday sermons in black churches. They taped all this. Van Damme also widened his investigation to establish military intelligence branch offices in New York, Philadelphia, Chicago, St. Louis, Salt Lake City, New Orleans, San Francisco, and Los Angeles, laying the foundation for the creation of 304 intelligence offices in the United States that still exist in the United States today, still gather files on people, still photograph people, still tap the telephones, still tape record people. Van Damme and Loving began recruiting informers within the black community. Robert Morton, Booker T. Washington's successor at Tuskegee Institute, came aboard, as did Dr. C.V. Roman of Nashville, who sent Loving a list of potential black informers and troublemakers in the Mid-South. Loving wrote Van Damme on November 1917 that Mr. Robert Church of Memphis, who is one of the wealthier men of this race, has put me in touch with one prominent colored man in each of the largest southern cities. Loving also tried to tell Van Damme that it was not all black dissidents arose from German influence. Loving sent a letter to Van Damme, a clip from a commercial appeal about a man named Legion Scott, a black man burned at the stake by a mob after being accused of assaulting a Dreiserburg, Tennessee woman. Is there not some way by which we may assure the colored people of that section which the government will take steps to bring to justice the perpetuators of this awful crime, Loving asked. But Van Damme wanted proof of subversion, not moral judgment. He hired Joel Springarn, the whiteboard chairman of the NAACP, and made him a major in the military intelligence in May of 1918. Springarn and a black agent, a Lieutenant Montgomery Gregory, ran a small unit of undercover black agents according to the intelligence documents. The documents show Springarn remained the NAACP's chairman during his tenure in military intelligence, used his post to obtain crucial information for military intelligence, such as a list of the organization's 30,000 members. The NAACP gives an annual award named for Springer, still now in 1993. Opening private mail became the second nature. During World War I, military intelligence opened 100,000 pieces of mail a week and surreptitiously subscribed to more than 60 black publications to keep track of black thought, as they still do now in 1993. Despite these efforts, military intelligence could not convince his superiors of a German orchestrated black subversion movement. This guy Van Damme apparently was a very funny guy. Listen to this. It turns out Van Damme set up J. Edgar Hoover with his lover Clyde Tolson. I'll quote from the article. In 1918, Van Damme introduced Clyde Tolson, a Baker aide, to a young Justice Department clerk, John Edgar Hoover, who in 1924 became head of the Bureau of Investigation, later the FBI. Tolson left the War Department in 1928 to join the FBI. He became Hoover's number two man by 1947, which he remained until Hoover's death in 1972. Many Hoover scholars believe Tolson and his boss were lovers. Whatever their relationship, Tolson for 40 years would keep close contact with Army intelligence. Those intelligence documents provide clues to Hoover's unusual level of cooperation with Army intelligence. The FBI director, obsessed with turf and power, was no fan of the Office of Naval Intelligence, the oldest government espionage organization in the United States, or of the Central Intelligence Agency, with which he battled for control of spying inside the United States. But Hoover and Van Damme often, through Tolson, regularly shared information on their dual obsession, Negro and communist agitators. Hoover continued to share information with the Army Intelligence Branch long after Van Damme's retirement.
Jesus, they're using your name again to sanctify their means and ends. The Inquisition is here again, and they're doing it in your name. Books and witches to the flames. Bless the missiles, the bombs and flames. We're off to war in the Christian way.
What the defense budget was for 1982?
$700 million a day. Oh, excuse me, but I got to go.
I'd like to call my daughter in Dar es Salaam.
Yeah.
Do you happen to know what time it is in Tanzania?
12 hours later than it is here. What would this crazy? I'll see you later, ma'am.
It seems like
And thank you to the San Francisco Mime Troupe for that accurate depiction of the U.S. Army as the Army of the Night, the Nazis of the Night, surrounding us. Okay, now more extensive information on the King assassination. By the way, we're going to have a conference on this at the Hilton Hotel coming up next week or so. So if you're interested in a ticket, it'll be on a Tuesday night, 6 to 10 p.m. Please give us a call at the office, 897-0153. The phone number again is 897-0153. And if you'd like a copy of this file on the King assassination that I've been reading from, it's P.O. Box 422644, San Francisco. That P.O. Box number again is 422644, San Francisco, 94142. And you send me a self-addressed stamped envelope, and that means you got to send me two envelopes. One is your return envelope with a stamp on it and your name, and also a donation to help me cover the cost. And I will send you, as a matter of fact, the more donation you send me, the more material I'll send you. Is that a deal? That is a deal. Now, I've got a lot of files, and I'd like to be able to send it to you, but I can't really just give it away because you wouldn't value it. If I gave it to you for free, you would think it was worthless. So it's the deal is the more of a donation you send me to cover my costs of printing, the more I can send you. Isn't that a deal? By the way, yes, it will be at the San Francisco Hilton. All right, here we go. Reading from the Tennessee newspaper that has uncovered the actual assassins of Dr. Martin Luther King 25 years later. The 20th Special Forces Group, headquarters in Alabama, seemed perfect for the scouting missions in the South. The missions of the 20th was a National Guard unit of part-time warriors who lived and worked in many of the same communities where black unrest was centered. Green Berets from the 20th often spied on King and other black Americans during the 1960s, military records and interviews show. Some Vietnam Special Forces veterans, particularly those who had worked in the murky clandestine operations with the CIA and the SOGS, the Special Operations Group, or the Top Secret Detachment B-57, were dumped into the 20th for safekeeping. What this article is saying, this is according to a former major with Army counterintelligence work, what they're saying were dumped into the 20th for safekeeping. That means if you train somebody during the Vietnam War to torture people and spy on people and kill people, that's all they know how to do. And so it was like the green, it was like the Rangers of World War II. These guys were so kill crazy that the Army found they couldn't return them to civilian life because all they wanted to do was going around killing people, mugging people, knifing people. And when they came back to the United States, so they had this policy of taking these Rangers and keep putting them back into the front lines until they were all dead, these trained killers, these dogs. And so now they were taking these killer dogs from Vietnam and dumping them into the South and using them to attack the civil rights movement. So many of these Nazis and Ku Klux Klanners in the South were actually victims of the CIA and Army intelligence training. They were trained to be racist, trained to be killers, and then dumped into the South, according to this article. So please keep that in mind when you listen to this. They couldn't let a lot of these, now they even say it, they couldn't even let a lot of these crazy guys back in the States because they couldn't forget their training, he said. Birmingham's 20th headquarters became Saigon. The rural South was in country, and at times things got out of hand. Many members of the 20th during the 60s still lived in the South, some under new identities. Some of them spoke to the commercial appeal only if their names were not used or locations revealed. A former 20th Special Forces sergeant from Detachment B-6, Company B, who was stationed in Columbus, Mississippi, said the unit's undercover missions didn't peek into windows, if that's what you mean. Okay, I'm going to stop the reading now and continue on the other side, play a little bit of music, and I want to remind you that the special conference on the assassinations of John Kennedy and Martin Luther King. We'll be at the Hilton Hotel next week on a Tuesday at 6 p.m. You will need a ticket, reservations, and all that stuff. Please call our office, 897-0153, if you're interested in tickets. And or you can write to us for a free copy of this report, at P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142. I'll give you that again. That's P.O. Box 422-644, San Francisco 94142.